coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
We are pleased to bring a special episode featuring our interview with the woman who directed the incredible season 3 premiere of Queen Sugar, Demaine Davis.
Demaine shares insight on the work she and the cast put in to create that incredible episode. And she also shared behind-the-scenes information about the scene from the premiere that everyone is talking about.
All of that, and it's the big sell as well, right now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture. Before we get started, one bit of business. If you are a fan of this podcast and haven't taken the time to rate us on iTunes, please do so now. Show us some love and go to iTunes and leave a rating and a review.
So for fans of the Ava DuVernay series, Queen Sugar, this is a very special week. The Oprah Winfrey Network drama returned for a third season on Tuesday night, and the premiere was another riveting, emotion-filled episode that had all of us on the edges of our couches with a box of tissues in hand.
We had the opportunity to speak all about this episode and the upcoming Queen Sugar season with the episode's director, Demaine Davis.
But be warned, if you have not seen the season 3 premiere, we do have a number of spoilers, so please, you've been warned, there are some spoilers coming up.
So we are very excited to welcome Queen Sugar director Demaine Davis to the podcast.
Demaine is a successful director, writer, and producer who has worked across TV, film, and commercials. Her work has been featured at Sundance and has been nominated at the Independent Spirit Awards.
Demaine is one of the all-female directing team on Queen Sugar. She directed 2 episodes of Queen Sugar in season 2 and directed the season 3 premiere, which we are going to talk about in a moment. And she is now also the producing director this season. Demaine, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here, and it's thank you for saying all that stuff, which is like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true. That really happened. That's real. No, this is real life. It's happening.
It's happening, and we're so grateful to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I wanted to start off with just how you got involved with Queen Sugar, and I had read that you and Ava DuVernay essentially met through Twitter.
Yes. Twitter is the way that we met. I have since bronzed that Twitter email. I was at work. I was actually freelancing at an advertising agency working on a job, and I followed her, and then she followed me maybe a few months later, and I was kind of like, oh, okay. And then I just sort of acted like it didn't happen. And then she emailed through Twitter and was like, hey, how are you doing? I'm a big fan. You're a real Renaissance woman. And I was just like, what? Just going nuts. I remember the art director I was working with at the time. I kept going, what? What? And he was like, what's going on? And I was like, we're having a liquid lunch. That's what's going on. You're having drinks. This cannot be real life. So we struck up a conversation then. And then she asked me to be a part of Array Day, her releasing company. Which is great. Every year they do this thing where anyone can ask questions of any director that she picks, and it goes on all day, and you get this sort of half an hour block to do that. And I was honored to be able to do that, got some great questions, and, you know, found out they were really great fans of some of my work, and also just budding filmmakers. It was great to make that connection with those people. And then I did that for a second year. And the day before the hour before I started my little block, she was like, thanks so much for doing this for me, sis. And I'm like, sis? I'm like,
oh, anointed.
Yeah, totally. And I was like, yes, anything for you. Absolutely. Like, you know, I want to put all these emojis. I'm like, no, let's just be professionals. Emoji-less conversation. And then later, like, I was like, oh, I want to write her back, but I can't. And then I got a heart. I got a yellow heart in response to that. And then that day, Paul Garns, the executive producer of Queen Sugar, called me and said, hey, did Ava call you? I was like, oh, yeah, she's sitting right here. We're just like eating Pringles and watching Oprah. No, Ava didn't go. Oh, yeah, oh, she wants you to direct episode 206. So you'll come down and you'll do that. And I just was pie-eyed.
Wow.
I've been pie-eyed since then, pretty much.
I can imagine.
It's amazing. So social media can actually be a positive thing. That is
true.
Great story.
Proof positive right here.
So I'm really curious to ask you because you've worked in film and all of a sudden you're asked to direct episode 206. So the show's already been on for a season and a half. Obviously, Ava liked your style, your vision, but what was it like bringing that, but also working for a series that had already established a tone and a visual look?
Well, I mean, working in this medium, having that opportunity and not having had that opportunity before is like, just mind is already blown. A show like this, that's so important, has so many incredible fans, has episodes that talk about real stuff that's real to us, you know, talk about racism, immigration, rape, all of these incredible things, but doesn't feel like that. Like, it never feels that preachy. You don't feel like you're getting any kind of a lesson, but you walk away with it. And also a show that's so visually stunning and then has this cadence that it actually slows down. It's like no show I've ever experienced before where you get lulled into it and there aren't quick cuts and there aren't like an explosion that you see from five different angles. And, you know, it's just real people living their lives, emoting, you know, triumphing, challenging themselves, challenging each other. So that part alone was huge to me. And then I tried not to think about the fact that it was already established and it had been out there and it had such a great following, because I think I would have just freaked myself out even more. I just went into it thinking, okay, she's asked me to do this and I love this show and I love everything that it's saying. So yeah, I can do it. Okay. You know, you tell yourself and then it happens. So
who are some of the directors in TV shows and films that might have influenced you, especially going into directing an episode of Queen Sugar?
You know, I've always been, it's interesting because all the people that she's selected for first season and second season are directors that some I knew, some I kind of heard about. Nima Barnett, I love her work. Julie Dash, of course, is the queen. So it's great to see her work here. I was going to have the chance to meet her. I didn't get the chance to, so I probably would have just, I don't know, cried and then walked away or something. So, it's been great because now being a part of this family, which is exactly what it's like, is you have all of these other filmmakers who are your sisters and they truly are your family. Like, we email all the time. I was texting with Amanda Marsalis just 10 minutes ago. You check in with them. It's great to have this sisterhood where if something's going on, you can talk to them and you can share resources, which is kind of the biggest thing that I think that Ava has given me and given us in this instance, not just this show and not just this experience, but the idea that you can share things and you don't have to be fearful of sharing them. And you don't have to be like, well, if I share this, then everyone else gets it and I don't have it. Like, that's what she's done. She's given this experience to everyone. And so we share everything. We share resources, if there are websites or, oh yeah, I really like this lawyer. Or I was just talking to Don Leanne Gardner today about, like, you know, you should see my massage therapist. Like, there's never anyone like, well, if I give you that person, then that person's not available for me. It's like, no. I use that person. I want you to use that person. I want all of us to come up together. And that's the most amazing thing that I think I've received from this adventure.
That's so beautiful. So generous, really. It's just kind of like a chain of generosity, which is really, really wonderful to hear.
I think that segues nicely into my next question, which is, talking to you about your new title, producing director, I feel like a lot of what you had described, that responsibility is now on your shoulders. Would you tell our listeners what a producing director does?
Yeah, so here, working on this show, I am responsible for the story. I'm sort of the keeper of the story. I'm responsible for the maintaining the look of the show from director to director. I am a liaison between the writers and also whoever our female directors are that are coming in. And I mentor those directors, help them get through this process, answer questions for them. I'm sort of boots on the ground for whatever may happen, as well as working really closely with our DPs, Antonio Cavach and Kira Kelly, and our production designer, Ina Mayhew, and of course, Paul Garns, and making sure that everything is running smoothly, that new locations are, you know, what we want them to be, and all of that kind of stuff. So it's literally a 24-hour job, but I love it. I absolutely adore it. And I also get to read all the scripts beforehand. I know all the secrets.
Oh my God, I have so many questions.
I know all the secrets. You guys don't even know. I'm so proud of myself for not revealing secrets to any friends or family. Like, I can't even believe I've been able to do it. Someone said something to me the other day and I was like, well, that's because she... No, nothing happens. That's just because she's a lady that we love. Right. There's nothing going on with that character at all. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I know all these secrets. So I get to read all the scripts and have input, and I get to watch every cut and have input. And I couldn't be more honored or happier or prouder to be able to do that for such a beautiful show.
That's the dream, right? That's amazing. Yeah. To be able to pour yourself into something that you're extremely passionate about. That's amazing to hear. And I really do want to ask you so many questions to get these secrets out of you. But I am going to hold back.
I'm proud of you for holding back.
Well, I wanted to ask the question that I asked Kat last season was, are we going to have a Queen Sugar wedding? Because we were leading up to Darla and Ralph Angel's wedding. And that obviously didn't happen.
Did not happen.
But there's a potential for a Violet, Aunt Vi Hollywood wedding now that we saw in season 3 premiere that got me a little excited for a Queen Sugar wedding. I just think it would be so beautiful the way that you guys have that incredible, look and texture. In the show, a wedding would be amazing on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that a wedding would just be like, it would be the best. It would be the pinnacle. It would have all of those classic notes, and it would probably make you cry. You probably cry more at a wedding if that wedding were to occur than you would at anyone else's wedding. Like, but you wouldn't tell anyone. You'd be like, no, I cried at my sister's wedding. But really, you were home, like, watching by and Hollywood, like, oh my God.
Oh, I would cry at their wedding. No joke. They're like relationship goals to me. I love their relationship. I love Vi in all things anyway. And Vi should be my aunt. I love her so much. And I would just die for that wedding.
I would cry at any Queen Sugar wedding. I will say, especially Nova's wedding. If Nova ever got it together to commit and fall in love, that is the wedding that I think would induce the most tears from my eyes.
Yeah, because that would have to really be real, right? Like, for that to happen, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that would be incredible. I will say that the reality is that, like, I cry every time I watch the show. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's something that I think, and I don't know if it's true for you guys as well, but I feel like, and people, the fans of Queen Sugar are so amazing. Lizzie, who runs Ava DuVernay Fans, the Queen Sugar fans, there's the Cerebo Squad, Cerebase. Mm-hmm. What's great is like they just like it's everyone crying and we all get to cry together. And I get so many people who are like, I cried so much. And I'm like, yeah, just, you know, let it heal you, because it's become this space where it's okay to do that and to have women do that, but also men, to have men like be like, I got really emotional. I'm like, that's good. It's good. You need that release. Like, you need it to. And it doesn't matter if you're suddenly crying about like a million other things in your life or the world. This show gives you that space, and I think it's really healing. So, happy tears or sad tears. There's always some crying, especially when you have actors as incredible as these actors are, who just like lay it down every time. And I promise you, there are never any tricks to make any of these actors cry. These actors are really crying every single time, every single take, every time we move the camera. those are real tears. There's no, I guess the old trick was you put like, you blow some Vicks vapor rub in someone's eyes. I don't even know what the new techniques are because we don't use them. People are really crying. They're really getting mad. They're in it, you know,
wow.
And it's amazing to witness. It's amazing.
So let's talk about these wonderful actors, and they really are incredible. They feel like my siblings and aunts and cousins and friends. But what kind of conversations do you and the other directors have? Like, let's say at the beginning of the season, did you kind of sit down and talk to them about, so this, you know, time has passed and this is what's happened to your character and this is what you might want to bring to the scene? How do those conversations go?
Well, I always tell the directors, the actors are not people that you will have to worry about. They are not, both the actors and the crew. You're never going to be like, oh, I wish that you had cried more, or I wish that you had showed me that you were upset about that more, or I wish, because they are in it. And especially now, 3 seasons, they've lived it for so long. You know, Dondre Whitfield likes to say, I said, well, I look at when a director comes in, they're like a guest, and you know, they're in your home. And so, you know, don't put your feet on the sofa, that kind of thing. And he said, well, yeah, they're like a visitor. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And he goes, yeah. He's like, you know, we're the chefs. We're making the meal and they're adding a little spice. And I go, oh, that's good. I like that. So they come in and they make slight adjustments, and they might say, you know, Lauren Wolkstein, that has this great scene where, you know, Micah's in the room and he's like, I want to do a point of view shot. I want to shoot this whole scene, you know, coverage on everyone, but shoot this whole scene from Micah's point of view, because he's the one whose eyes are really open to this moment. And so, you know, that's something that they bring. The look of it, making sure, because they know the script, and they also get a tone meeting where they find out a little bit about what's to come, which they are not to share with the actors. They have some information that no one else is privy to about what will come next. So it'll be like, well, you can do that, but let's not go there because something else is coming that I can't tell you about. You know right. what I mean? My conversations with them are generally more about, you know, what people are like and what people prefer and, you know, what their processes are. But it's rarely like, you know, this is, let's sit down and let's talk about how you would work with them or what they've been through, because they know it. I mean, like Dawn especially will say, you know, okay, but I'm doing this, but I just want you to know. I don't know if you know this. In season 2, episode 3, I spoke to him about this, and we went there and we did that. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. So she's like, so maybe if we don't, I go, yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how we can, you know, block this scene differently, or how maybe this word can change, you know, so it doesn't feel the same to you. So they're in it. They're living it. It's really incredible.
Yeah, that's so impressive. I actually went and saw Ava and the cast speak just this past weekend at the Vulture Festival.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And they watched the scene where Ralph Angel told the family that Blue wasn't his at the end of season 2. And the entire cast cried again. I was like, you already cried in the scene. You probably cried every time you took that take. And now you're watching it again months later and you still cry. It's amazing how connected they are to the story and to their characters in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to each other. I had the privilege of directing that episode, and they were just in the rehearsal, you know, I mean, just straight up like horizontal tears shooting out. And you know, you just kind of walk around it. The way that I work with them as a director is I loosely will say, what I was envisioning is maybe you guys are seated here, you're here, and you enter here. Let's just try one. And they do it. And then I just walk around with my camera and I shoot photos of it, because I can see it and I'm like, oh yeah, we want to be behind his head. Look at that, because everyone's looking at him. We got to be behind his head. And it's just this light coming in. And then I'll show that to Antonio and I'll go this, right? And Antonio, who's from Spain, goes, uh-huh, yes, okay. And then, you know, like I just keep moving around them, letting them do their thing. And, you know, you can have a plan and you can have a number of setups and reference photos, but once you get in there and they start moving around and they start emoting and they're holding each other, you just, you know, you could, that sometimes it gets thrown out the window, man, because they're doing it and they're in it. And it's like, oh, I can't be over here. I got to be over here. You know, and I've done, I directed episodes 307 and 308. I block shot for the first time, so shooting two episodes at once. And we had this beautiful master shot. And I said, I want to be here and I want to be out the window. And Antonio went, And I said, I really want to be out this window. And he's like, okay, we'll see. And then we shoot it from out the window. And he comes back and he goes, it's so beautiful. And I said, yeah, I know. And we shot one. And then I was like, okay, what next? And I said, we got to come in the room, because from that master we had shot, Rutina was crying. And you couldn't even see it. Like, you didn't even know. So I was like, I got to get in there. I got it. So that's become my new thing that I say. I'm like, you know, okay, you're out here. That's beautiful. That's great. But get in there. You got to get in there. You got to see what they're doing. Look at their faces. It's amazing. So
I would love to start talking about some specific scenes of what is a beautiful, emotional, so satisfying season premiere. Thank you to you and the whole crew and cast giving us, I mean, worth the wait. You know, we hated waiting all these months, but so worth the wait.
It always is. Yeah.
So we know what scene we want to talk about. But before that, I want to talk, I'd love to talk to you about, or have you talk to us about, one of my favorite scenes in the episode, which is, I never thought I would have a one-on-one between Charlie and Prosper Denton, but I just thought that episode touched me so much. I thought it was just gorgeous, the way it was shot and filmed, the light and sitting in the field. And I would just love to hear you talk a little bit about what, maybe if you know from the writer's point of view, what inspired the scene and how you went about shooting this scene between those two great actors.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, big ups to Henry Sanders, legend, living legend, killer of sheep. Yeah. It's funny. I actually, a few months ago, my niece, who's a huge Queen Sugar fan, and I were sitting down to watch TV together. And she put on Moesha. There were like reruns of Moesha. And it was like in the mall scene where it was a robber dressed up as Santa Claus and he robbed them all in the store and he pulled the beard off. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Prosper. It was hilarious. So he is just, I mean, talk about masterclass. Like, that man is incredible. I literally, he's very much the same. I don't give him too much direction other than to just say, you know, you could be a little bit more this here, or maybe if you move to your left, or maybe, you know, because it's all in him and he just brings it. It was a pleasure to have the two of them together in that scene. And I think one of the things that's certainly evident is, you know, Prosper is a link to Ernest. He's the closest that anyone has, especially Charlie, to her father. And so, you know, her wanting to take care of that community, wanting to take care of other farmers, is a way of saying that that's what she wants for him. It's a way of saying that that's what she wants to do for her dad. So it was great to have them there. We always knew we wanted it in the field, by the tree. Anel Broder, our wardrobe designer, came up with that gorgeous pink pashmina, which I think just like the tones made her face look incredible. You know, Nancy Martinez, who does phenomenal hair. She did my hair on set yesterday. Just like, can I do your hair? I was like, yes, you can. Yes, you can braid, do whatever you want. And then Lalette Littlejohn, who does makeup. You know, they're stunning. They really make these people look incredible. And then it was all about the light. And Antonio, you know, knew when he wanted to shoot it, knew when he would get that light. Having Henry, you know, walk over, come from the house. And then you just put it there. It's sort of like Dondre said, you know, it's, you don't have to turn on the heat that much, you know, it simmers. It really cooks itself. And I think there's a wonderful relationship budding between the two of them that you can really see and experience. It's also kind of great to see a character of that age. And Henry is playing older than he is, because let me just tell you, Henry Sanders can do a 2-minute plank. So
what?
Oh yeah. Henry Sanders, I said to him, I said, you know, I'm feeling really bad because there's a 24-hour gym where I live down here and I'm never in the gym. And he was like, oh, I was up at 5:30 this morning. And I went, what? And he was like, yeah, you should just do planks. You know how to do planks? I was like, yeah, I could do a plank for like 25 seconds. Right. He was like, yeah, how long are you? Oh, I'm up to 2 minutes. I was like, damn. I started working out that day. I started my workout back up. Every time I was like, I'm doing it for Henry.
Meanwhile, his character has to have back surgery.
So. Yeah, exactly. Has back surgery, which is, and Henry himself, the man, the actor, had to have back surgery. Okay. So it's kind of like he's feeling much better and can walk upright, but we're making him walk with this cane. It's sort of ironic. But it's really wonderful to see two people of those types of ages together on screen, of this race, of this culture, talking about the things that they talk about. And, you know, Prosper's a proud man. You know, he's a very proud man. He's reluctant to accept help. He wants to be the one who helps. And, you know, that's every person of that age I know in my life, you know. So it's really great to see them together and to see them explore that. And I think that there will be some more of that. Yeah, in the season to come.
Okay, I like that.
I'm looking
little
looking
teaser.
Very yeah. much forward to that. You know, yeah, there's so much to discuss in this episode. If we're in the Charlie land, that conversation was so beautiful. But the rest of the episode, Charlie is doing a lot of things that she's calculating quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And I feel like that's going to be a lot of the thread of her storyline this season. And it's so, I mean, she comes from a good place, but mm-hmm. she can be like extra cutthroat as well. I can't imagine, you know, those conversations and how she had to kind of slightly pivot, you know, where she's come from.
Yeah, she, I say that out of all the characters, she's the one with the most layers. Because, you know, she has to be a mother to Micah. She has sort of this slick LA persona that she can slip into to try to, like, get you whenever possible. She's got the whole Davis situation. And now with what you've seen in 301, she's got to be one way with her family and then one way with the farmers and then another way with the Landrys. So she's, Dawn is digging pretty deep, this season, very much like past seasons, but certainly there are additional layers there, to see what she's going to do and how she's going to react. She's in it to win it, you know, she is absolutely there and here for it. So, and that's her plan. She always has a plan, you know, she always will. So, it's going to be interesting to see her navigate that plan, to see how it affects other people. If and when they find out about it, to see how it challenges her to even want to do that, what she's doing, you know, is that the best way to go about it? It's her way. Yeah. So in her mind, that's the best way.
Yeah.
You know, that's how she operates.
Well, and then the other actual storyline of her, you know, wanting to seek justice for her son, also in the realm of all of this, it just always makes my blood boil and it makes hers boil as well. You know, every moment of this premiere when something came up, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, she's also dealing with this.
Right, right. She has it all. I joke with her a couple of days ago and I'm like, I hope we don't, maybe we'll give you a dog and then we'll kill it. I mean, like, this is so much happening. I'm really sorry. She was like, yeah, no, I know. It's good. It's good. It's okay. It's all right. I'm like, woo. You know, and then like sometimes it'll be Friday and I'll be like, so this is the weekend you're going to get acupuncture, right? Like, you really need to relax. She's
right.
Like, yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean that, you know, that storyline, again, just, you know, kudos to all the writers in the writer's room. You know, and to Kat Candler and to Anthony Sparks, Dr. Anthony Sparks, I have to call him Dr. Sparks, who are really not shying away from it. Mm-hmm. That's something, I mean, even getting 301 and reading about the basketball game, I was like, y'all are doing this. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and then I was like, oh wait, I'm directing that. Okay. Phew, okay. Oh my God. All right. So it's topical, you know, it's all right here. It's all relevant. And it's all stuff that we're thinking about. Some of us are unfortunately living through. Some of us are hopefully surviving it. And I feel like it's really important, you know, it's so authentic, which is what I respond to the most about the show, to be able to not just sensationalize those kinds of storylines, but to embrace them and to show how people really handle them and navigate them. And for Charlie, you know, she's doing the best that she can with that. You know, part of me feels like she should be trying to talk to Micah about it a little bit more, but you know, she got to do it the Charlie way. Mm-hmm. She got to come at it from like, I'm going to get you. You are going down.
Right.
This is, yes. You know, that's the way she does it. So
yeah. That is her plan.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it makes me think about how, I mean, like in general, people say that men compartmentalize a lot and women don't, right? Like women live in, like they are who they are in all these different worlds. But it's interesting seeing how she is becoming more harsh, more cutthroat. And is that affecting her ability to talk to Micah in more of a way, to be with Remy?
Yeah.
You know, is it like, is she just hardening herself all around? But the one place that I'm so thankful, this is the only thing I'm going to ask of you, Demaine. I am so thankful that the siblings are united and constantly supporting each other. These are my own issues I'm bringing to watching Queen Sugar, my own sibling issues. But when they during seasons 1 and 2, when they were at each other's throat, not testing each other, it was so hard to watch. But I'm so thankful that at least for the moment, because they need each other, that they're all supporting each other.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Please.
I mean, I think you're going to, you know, that's real life though, right?
Yeah,
it's like you got beef with your sister and then, you know, something goes down and you turn around and there she is and you're like, she's like, let's get it. You know, let's clean up this mess. Let me call who I got to call. And you're like, okay, you know, I think that's the difference, right? Like that's what separates family from friends. There's that feeling that, you know, you're supposed to heed that call. You know, I do have a lot of friends who I've been fortunate enough to, they heed my calls all the time. But, you know, certainly you have the most strife, the most laughter and the most tears with your family. You know, I'm glad to see them. I'm glad to see them too. I'm glad to see them, you know, together to, for a little while, kind of laugh, have, well, sort of laugh, you know, cause Ralph Angel is, you know, laughs are few and far between. You get, you get that 1000 watt smile. You gotta, you know, you bask in it when you can, because he's angry or he's sad. There's a lot happening. But it is, I was just going to say, it is great to see them together. It's great to see them have a little, you know, share a little laugh, have a little story. And, you know, I'm hopeful for them. I'm hopeful for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a great segue. I'm obviously hopeful for them, but the segue of the three siblings and of course of Ralph Angel, we're going to talk about that paternity scene now. Everybody prepare.
I'm not ready.
I don't know if I'm ready to talk about it. It gives me chills just thinking about it. That scene, one, just the strength of those sisters who are there with him in that moment, just establishing that was already enough for me to just get super weepy. And then that single shot, I would love to talk about the crafting and the direction of that scene, because you ended up with just that one single shot of him once he found out and just saying, it don't change nothing.
Yeah. I'm really, really happy with how that came out. I'm, again, just so honored to get to portray that moment, such a big moment. And I knew right away that I wanted to film it sort of, I call it kind of Kubrick style, Stanley Kubrick, that you would see the entire room. I wanted you to see the ceiling. I wanted it to feel like a box and boxed in, but I wanted them to all be together. And I also wanted to mirror from what I had directed in 2015 with Charlie on the left and Nova on the right. So Once we found that location, which was actually in a high school, and our production designer, Ina Mayhew, who, oh my God, she's worked with Spike Lee. She's worked with Tyler Perry. And now she's been on Queen Sugar for 2 seasons. She's another legend. She transformed it. She turned that empty classroom, ancillary classroom, into this doctor's office. And it was all about just putting them in there and getting close to them and then pulling away, which was, you know, Antonio and I had talked about that. And he was like, and then we push. Yes. And I go, yep, you push and then you pull. Mm-hmm. What was interesting is I always thought they would, three of them would just sit there. And then the doctor would come out and they would still be sitting there. And so, you know, they would just be kind of together that whole time. But both Don and Rutina said when he gets the folder and then he sits down, I feel like we need to step away from, we need to give him his privacy. And I said, okay, yeah, let's do it. And we rehearsed it like that. And it was like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's dope. Like that makes it. So they did it. And then we pushed. And then of course, Kofi had gum the whole time. And I said, a cat was there on that day. And I said, so no gum, right? And Kat was like, yeah, no gum. And I asked Kofi and I said, so do you think maybe you could do this without the gum? And he said, the gum stays. And I was like, I said, okay. He's like, I need something because I, you know. And I said, okay, all right, you're nervous. I said, could you maybe just chew a little quieter? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. So, and then it was he who repeated that line, that it don't matter. That it wasn't written like that. It was just like, it don't matter. And so him doing it over and over again, and we got you, Ra, and, you know, them just coming in. I mean, I could have shot that all day. But we didn't need to, because they nailed it. And Antonio nailed it. Everyone collectively nailed it. And I felt really good about it. I felt really good. Thank you. I'm glad that you guys liked it and that you responded to it. And there wasn't really much else to do but to let it sit there. It was so funny. I will tell you that. So the crew, the entire crew, which remains the finest crew I've ever worked with in my career. They all had to get the script, and a bunch of them pulled me aside individually, not knowing this, like three or four people. And they'd be like, okay, but that still is dad though, right? Aww. Like this doesn't, you know, I don't think like, right. And I was like, well, yeah, but you know, and they were like, yeah, no, it's still like four different crew members. Like, Demain, can you come over here? I was just like, because this doesn't, and I was like, it's still like, by the fourth person, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was just like, yes, everyone. Yes. There's everything's great. Don't, because everybody here is just wrapped, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. When you see those actors in this moment, knowing how big this moment is. Yeah. And knowing Ethan, who plays Blue, is, I mean, we will all be working for him very soon. So I promise you, he will be a great boss, a great leader. He's incredible. So knowing him and his energy, when he comes to set, he hugs everyone, talks to everyone, and much like all the other actors do. So this, it's not just real for these actors and real for the people who watch, who I'm grateful for watching. It's so real for this crew, you know, they are just like hanging on to it, you know, as am I, and many times, and in that scene as well, a lot of times I forget to call cut when I'm directing, because I'm just like, cut. Yeah, that's right. No, that's a cut. Okay, I'm sorry. I was watching TV for a minute. Sorry, y'all.
As you slowly wipe away a tear that's formed on your cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, gosh.
So we're not going to ask you for specific spoilers. We know that you're too good for that. But any themes that we should be looking forward to in season three? Anything you can tell us about how season three might be different from previous seasons?
Well, I think as the first episode points to, you know, Charlie's on what the writers and have called, and what Ralph Angel has called before in season two, that Godfather shit. So excuse my French. So
true.
There's some revenge. There's going to be lots of plotting for her. I think that this is going to be with Nova and the possibility of this book. I think there's going to be a lot of introspection. And there's also going to be a lot of her really figuring out if this is what she wants to do. You know, she's a hero to a lot of people in this community and in the story. And is that the role that she wants to take, and how does she want to tell, you know, that story, and is her own story a part of it? I think you're going to see, Violet, you know, face, talk about lupus, not want to face that, but really, you know, that beat is going to be pretty big and pretty important. I know a lot of fans have responded to that, and it's been great to just have other people, encouraging other people to talk to other people. And I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of obviously, Ralph Angel, we're going to find out how he's going to approach this, how Blue is already kind of, you know, acting up a little bit as a lad his age would, but certainly kind of getting the sense that something's not right. And so you're going to see Ralph Angel's reaction to that. And then I think it's just about, it's really about like sharing, right? So like, how much information are we going to tell each other? Are we going to wait to tell each other information? Or, you know, are you going to see me crying over here? Are you going to come to me? Or I'm going to say, I'm about to cry. You know, mm-hmm. I think that a lot of, what's happening for these characters is highly charged. And my hope is that it encourages other people to sort of tell their own stories and to share what's happening with them, and to know that there are people, family or friends or community, Twitter or otherwise, that are there for them to, you know, to support them through. So there's definitely I feel like we should just get together at some point, like mid-season, and just talk off the record, so I could be like, I wanted to tell you about that.
Right, right. Right.
Please do that.
Yes, let's do it. So we only have a couple of more minutes left, but we definitely wanted to ask you, and Amita and I know really well, when you're in the midst of production or post, you don't have a lot of time to experience other culture, but we're wondering if there's anything currently that you're enjoying or that you're looking forward to in the world of pop culture.
Oh, yeah, I will tell you that I love Desus and Mero on Viceland. Yeah. That's pretty much where I get my news from.
Okay.
because I know that I'm going to laugh and I'm going to agree. And I love their style and their guests. I've been listening to The Read when I can quite a bit with Kid Fury and Crystal. And I'm all caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I'm a big fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I just think their storylines have been great. So when I have a little bit of time, I've done that. So I brought I brought all these books. I brought the Micah White book, about protesting. And I brought, what else did I bring? I brought this book, just sort of one of my, like a self-help book or something, and a couple other things. I ain't got mm-hmm. time. I brought all these journals. I'm like, I'm gonna write so much stuff in my journal. Yeah. I got like three empty journals. I'm like, they're still empty. I have no time. So mostly it's been stuff that I can sort of turn on and half watch, but listen to while I'm doing other things.
Okay.
And so it ends up being those things. And of course, you know, I did not start live tweeting until Queen Sugar, and I'm completely addicted to live tweeting.
It's addictive. Yeah.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun because everybody's watching, and then you're like, oh my God, what?
Yeah.
No, it's a good time. What do you guys have for me? What do you suggest? What should I be doing or watching?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I have a very self-serving, I have a self-serving pitch. I actually just finished a project at Viceland. And I would see Desus and Mero in the hallways all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I just finished it's a follow documentary, a 10-part documentary about the queer Vogue ballroom scene in New York City. So these dancers in New York for 3 months. I was at balls at 5 a.m., but kind of filming their lives in and out of the ballroom, and they are a treasure. I love them all. And so it's just started premiering on Viceland Wednesday.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer. I'm so excited.
Oh, I will. Okay. Good.
Okay, I'm going to watch that. Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you.
It's probably already on your radar, and you probably already heard enough about it, but Atlanta season 2.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
blew right through that. Oh my God. The woods. Oh my God.
I have to watch it all again. Except for Teddy Perkins, because I don't think I could live through that again.
No, I don't think I could live through that either. That was a little bit like Get Out part 2. I was like, what is going on here? Omar, who plays Hollywood, is actually really good friends with Brian, who plays Paperboy. Wow. And we had a long talk about The Woods. And that show is so beautiful and so it's great. Like, the laughs are bigger because the stakes seem so high because you don't know what's going to happen next kind of thing. And I'm like, you know, and everyone I know say, yeah, no, that's Atlanta. I have a very good friend who lives in Atlanta. Shout out to Lisa Cooper. I haven't spent much time down there, and everyone I know, have you guys spent time there? Cause everyone I know says, no, that is Atlanta. I'm like, real for reals. Holy. Okay. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really something different and worth watching multiple times because I feel like I miss something every time.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I feel too. And it's just, it's so beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, this has been said a million times, but I'm living in a world where you can see Queen Sugar and Atlanta and Blackish and just like such a range of lives
all
of people of color
things.
And
it
took a while, but it's TV is just it's what I think I knew I needed and wanted when I was in my 20s, and now finally we're seeing that. So
there was a great interview that Ava did. I think it was a round table with the Hollywood Reporter, and they were like, well, what shows did you identify with? And I think someone said The Cosby Show, and she was like, yeah, but that wasn't, I didn't know any doctor married to a lawyer who had a brown house who had this. And I was like, yeah, right. That's right. And everything that I grew up with was the Brady Bunch, the Partridge Family.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so now I'm like, yeah, let's get the Black Brady Bunch going.
Right.
Let's get the Black, you know, like, that's why Blackish works, you know? And it's everything that exactly what you said. You know, we knew that we wanted, we're finally getting to see it, and we deserve it. So it's great to have so many things to watch. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And Amita is of Indian descent, and we always talk about the fact that, and now the brown people are, they're getting their chance.
We're coming.
Yes.
We're next. We're next. We're following next. In your footsteps. We're getting there.
Yeah, come on. Get on the bus. Let's go. Let's do it.
We're getting on the bus. We are. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking out the time from your busy schedule. So what stage are you in now? You're in post and you're going to go back to shoot some more.
Yes. Yeah, so Nijla McMean is here. She directed a beautiful film called Jin. She is here right now directing 309. I just got two texts from someone on set asking me about some line that's going to change in a scene. So 309, and like, Kofi saying it like this, is that okay? I'm like, I can't text you back right now. So she's directing right now, literally across the way. And then Ayoka Chinzira, who teaches at Spelman, but has also directed Alma's Rainbow and a few other very fine films. She's on deck to direct 310. So she's scouting right now with Ina Mayhew. And then this weekend, I get my two cuts to 307 and 308. So I'll see them for the first time assembled, and I'll give the editor's notes. And then on Monday, we'll finish out Najla's episode, and then Ayo's will start on Wednesday, and we'll do it all over again until we hit 313.
The machine keeps going. And yeah. Shout out all female editors again.
Yeah, all female editors again.
Amazing.
We've got Avril, Shannon, and Shoshana Tanzer.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That's awesome. It's incredible. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's an embarrassment of riches that Ava has provided us with. And, you know, every day I literally pinch myself waking up knowing that I get to be a part of this big, beautiful family making this incredible show that is doing so much for so many people. And then, you know, I look on Twitter and I see that Ava just like, now she's doing some other series about Amazon women. And I'm like, boom, like, it's just, you know what I mean? I'm like, what's going on now? Yeah. Are you doing this? So, you know, such an inspiration.
Yeah.
And it's all happening. It's your time. It's our time. It's it's happening. So to anyone listening, just keep writing, keep singing, keep striving. It's worth it. It's going to happen. It's coming.
Thank you so much for your time, those amazing words, your amazing work on Queen Sugar. And we definitely want to let you get back to chime in on that line Kofi's trying to change.
We do not want to hold
so
up
we're
going to
let you go.
Okay. Thank you both so much.
All right,
let's please chat again sometime after episodes start airing.
I really do
want to talk to you. There's so much stuff going on.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we would love to. We would love to. Thank you again, Domain.
Okay. Thanks so much. Bye. Thanks for your time. All right. Bye.
I just want to thank Domain one more time for joining us. I loved her passion, her insight, how much she shared. And she's a very busy woman being the producing director on Queen Sugar. So we do appreciate her sharing her very, very limited amount of time.
And of course, guys, you know, we're such huge fans of this show. So it is not surprising for us to tell you to tune in. It is on Oprah Winfrey Network every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time.
Now we'll be back with The Big Sell after these short messages.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're the hosts of Everything's Coming Up Simpsons. Every episode, we cover a different episode of The Simpsons that is a favorite of our special guests.
We've had guests that are showrunners and writers and voice actors like Nancy Cartwright.
I got a D-minus, I passed!
And we've also had people that are on the Max Fun Network already.
Homer wearing that golf outfit is so funny.
It.
And then there's, when he gets super into golf, he's wearing the golf hat in
bed.
We've had Weird Al Yankovic on the show.
I was just struck by how sharp the writing is. I mean, that's no surprise because it's The Simpsons, but I mean, like, you can't say that about a lot of TV shows, particularly ones that at that point have been on the air for 14 years.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, smell you later.
Hey, we'd like to talk to you about our new podcast on Maximum Fun, Friendly Fire.
It's the podcast about action movies and Sylvester Stallone specifically. It's the show I've always wanted to make.
It is not that. It is not that at all.
It's a little bit more of a war movie podcast.
It's not a little bit more of a war movie podcast. It is explicitly a war movie podcast. We look at them from all sides and put them in a variety of cultural and historical contexts, such that anyone is going to enjoy this show.
So go grab Friendly Fire every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell. As we know, The Big Sell is our final segment of each and every episode, and this is the time when Amita and I take turns recommending something from the world of popular culture to the other, and then the next week, we return and share a rating of what we thought about that shared pop culture. Last week, I recommended a new song by Angelique Kidjo, a wonderful, amazing African singer, legend, queen, diva extraordinaire, a cover that she has done of the Talking Heads song Once in a Lifetime. Amita, what did you think of this song?
You may find yourself, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. It's so easy. I really enjoyed this cover. I love Angélique Kidjo's energy and excitement when she performs. And she took this song that is a really great kind of, it's like a wake up song to me. You know, it's like a, you know, a really wonderful wake up 80s, like, synth pop great song that I always enjoyed. Every time I hear it, I'm always just, I've got like a little pep in my step, and Angélique kind of flipped it and gave it this really amazing African tribal jazz vibe that, but still kept the energy in her way, which I really, really enjoyed. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this. I'm going to say enjoyed one more time.
But did you enjoy it?
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Now, last week I mentioned that for 30 years, I mean, I've been a Talking Heads fan since probably, yeah, like mid-80s. So for 30 years, I've been singing the wrong lyric.
Yes, I want to know what this one is.
All right, so everyone may just be like, Sean, clean out the earwax, because it's very clear that David Byrne was saying this all along. But I always thought David Byrne was saying regular days go by, which for me was like, oh yeah, you're talking about how we all make these decisions and you choose these lives and you're wondering, well, are these the right choices and how the hell did I get here? And so it's like, oh, regular days go by, right? Like day after day is regular. Until I heard Angélique Kidjo's version where she's saying something actually much more poetic, which was letting good days go by. And I was like, what? That's even more of a gut punch. Oh, my God. So I have been living a lie.
You're not living a lie, because I didn't think it was, I was closer to what was the original than you. But I was letting the days go by is what I had heard.
Okay. I still may be wrong, but I think she's saying letting good days go by, which, oh Lord, let's not let the good days go by.
We should not. Let's savor every good day we have.
We should not. And as I mentioned last week, I'm super excited because she is doing an entire cover of the Talking Heads album Remain in Light. So that like kind of seminal, my favorite Talking Heads album is the one that comes out before Remain in Light, but I think Remain in Light is really, really, really good as well. African influence. Now she's flipping it, reversing it, covering what they kind of sort of covered. So I can't wait for that. I think that's out on June 8th, same day as Sense8's finale. It's going to be a good day.
That's going to be a wonderful
so
day.
What is your rating, Amita, of this Once in a Lifetime cover?
I just want to say I did some reportage, to quote you. It is letting the days go by. So I knew that lyric.
And I got it wrong once again.
And you got it wrong once again. Yes. And you got it wrong
letting
from
the days go by.
Singing as well. Yeah.
But I think, am I just morbid? Because letting good days go by is, anyway, it's all impactful, right? Letting the days go by. Thank you for that reportage.
You are welcome. I will tell you, while looking at all these lyrics, I don't know 60% of them. I'm reading it. I was like, oh, Into the Blue Again After the Money's Gone? Oh, I didn't know he was saying that.
It's funny because when you said it's like, oh, it's like a fun wake up song, I was like, it's actually like an existential crisis song in my head. But
oh, I mean, if I listen, I meant like more of like the melody and the beat of it.
Got it.
But I get why, yes, when you look at all these lyrics and you're just like, what? This is not my beautiful house. Wait a minute. Like,
this is not my beautiful wife.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So what's your rating?
Oh, sorry. Yes. My rating for this is, I'm going to give it a good 3 stars. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Cool, cool, cool. I feel like you made that decision on the fly. You hadn't come in with a plan, but you just let your feelings. We'll do it live.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I like it. I'm so funny. It's so funny that you knew
that
too.
Great, great. We know each other all too well. All too well.
So well.
What I don't know about you is what you're about to big sell to me.
This week, if you had watched the news, Harvey Weinstein had been in, he has gone to jail. He was arrested and he has been let out on like $1 million bail or something. So there have been some charges that have finally been filed against him, and he's actually seeing not very many repercussions for it, but things are slowly happening to this man who has unfortunately terrorized many women throughout his entire career, and abusing his power. So interestingly enough, you know, obviously the Me Too movement has been really, really gaining momentum with every unfortunate incident that keeps coming out. And I had found this TED Talk from one of our favorite people, Tracy Ellis Ross. And she has been a very fierce advocate for the Me Too movement. And I love everything she does. And she did a TED Talk recently, and it is called A Woman's Fury Holds Lifetimes of Wisdom. And it's about 10 minutes, and it is a beautiful and empowering talk from Tracy Ellis Ross about the power of a female voice. And I wanted to big sell that to you, but also big sell it to everyone, really, because I think it's really important. And I enjoyed it.
I can't wait to listen to that. I think that Tracy Ellis Ross is an amazing talent, but I also like the fact that she speaks out and knows what she's talking about when she speaks out. So very much looking forward to this big sell TED Talk. Tracy Ellis Ross, who knew? You did. And you're big selling it to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. Make sure you stay in touch with us, Pop Insiders, on Twitter and Instagram, at Pop Insiders. See, it's easy. You can also like us on Facebook, and make sure to head over to the InsidePopPodcast.com. That is our official website where you can find out a lot about us, listen to old episodes, and you can hit that subscribe button and catch us every week in your podcast feed.
And if you don't know where to find us, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere you find podcasts. But you can also find us on MaximumFun.org. We are alongside some really cool podcasts that are dedicated to comedy and culture. And we're so happy and honored to be a part of this podcast network.
We have much more great pop culture, music, TV, and music coming up on the next episode of Inside Pop. Thanks for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.